Hey there, conductors. If you've ever felt that you're not quite sure what to do next when you're studying a score, maybe you don't even know where to start with a difficult piece, maybe you study one piece too much and then you realize at the first rehearsal that you don't know another one well enough, or maybe you're a new conductor and you don't know what score study is, I'm excited to share that I'm finally publishing and sharing my score study checklist. I've been refining this for 12 years now, and I'm so excited to share it. It is going to walk you through my structure, my process to make sure that I learn every score that I need to learn well enough and so that nothing falls through the cracks. So it covers everything that you need to know. There's a link in the show notes. Go ahead and click it, sign up, and you'll get that score study checklist sent right to your email. You'll also get access to an 8-minute video of me explaining what each section is and how I use it to organize all the music that I need to learn. It's only 8 minutes, so it's not going to take you a whole hour to learn how to study better, how to put up a process for your score study, and how to make sure that nothing is falling through the cracks. So again, click the link in the show notes, and I hope to see you soon. Now, please enjoy this episode of Podium Time. Welcome to Podium Time, the podcast for conductors and students.
Getting some of those gigs is being in the right place at the right time. I got 3 or 4 gigs just hanging out at Chicago Symphony rehearsals. Turns out Andreas had studied with Doknani in Europe, and he's turned up there. Why weren't you in our audition for the assistant conductor position? The guy left. I said, I can't answer that. So I got a call from the artistic administrator. During that period of time, all of a sudden, 10 Christmas concerts and 4 children's concerts were in my lap because I was in the right place.
Yeah, so we met, I think I was doing the math earlier today. That was in 2010, I believe. About 8 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, that was correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I met you through her, of course. We did a couple.
Yes, and you had the dubious honor of taking lessons with me for a summer.
Yes, it was very fun. You had something that you told me about music in 3 is always extra human that I've shared with a couple people. It's always beyond.
Yeah. I'd say that the difference between us as a functional organism is that we are binary, that we have 2 of everything. The eyes, the nose holes, the mouth, its corresponding agent, the ears. We have all of that, and when you get into the realm of 3, it's a realm of fantasy. It's flowering. It's fragrant. It's different than just day-to-day drudgery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think about that every time. Maestro and I work a lot with conducting straight for duple and curved for triple, and I know that that feels much more. Very much more appropriate than I thought it would before we actually started working on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. So one comment made some difference in your life.
That's yep.
More than a lot of people get.
Yeah, and I've shared it with a couple students and a couple other people or groups that I've been working with. So I guess that's kind of the start of the episode, but maybe you could give us an overview of who you are and what you do. To start us out for those of our listeners that don't know who you are. But then at the end, would you tell us something that we can't find about you on Google?
Okay. let's see. Does it have to be G-rated? Okay. No, then. I'm Robert DeBow. I am a Long Beach, California native. I earned a doctorate with Gustav Meyer at the University of Michigan as the first American conductor to be fellow in conducting at the University of Michigan. Along the way, starting out, I just played in high school, band and orchestra, and went to Missouri State to do an undergraduate degree in education, followed that by conducting several years at the Little Theater in Springfield, which was really my first engagement. That led to a master's degree in Kansas City for my own orchestra, called the rather presumptuously the Conservatory Mozarteum Orchestra. Did that for 2 summers with volunteers. I called 600 people to get 50 people to play. And we did mainly Mozart concerts, but I did my first Beethoven 5 with that orchestra. Mm-hmm. I did my first Reichert's Overture.
Interject a question quick, you contacted 600 people. Were those, how many of those were people that you had no previous relationship with?
The majority of them.
Really?
Certainly more than half. I'd say closer to 70%.
Did you contact all professionals or students? Or?
It was a mixed match of people that were in the area. The Philharmonic had just folded the year before I got to Kansas City. Of course, the Kansas City Symphony, you guys know that organization, but there was a Philharmonic in Kansas City before that that went financially belly up. I went on the TV, actually, and I said, Kansas City is too great a city to not have an orchestra, and until we get one, we're going to try and do something in the summer. That fall, Russell Patterson took the opera orchestra and turned it into the Kansas City Symphony, and that's their origins were at that point in time. This would be about 1980-something, early 80s. Anyway, I had asked a bunch of kids at the conservatory if they wanted to play during the summer. Yeah, I'm going to be here. Okay, I got their numbers, and then I got personnel lists from every community orchestra in the city, and actually had a couple of people that were residents that had played in professional orchestras that came just to keep their reed wet, as it were. After the last concert I did with the Mozarteum Orchestra included a coronation mass by Mozart, I sent a tape of that to Gustav Meyer, and was invited to hang out in Ann Arbor for 1 year and with hopes that he would get to know me and I would get into school.
Yeah.
Well, everybody had told me that that was the way to get into school in Ann Arbor. I was literally the first conductor to hang out for a year that was accepted to school.
Yeah.
So I moved there not knowing that it was a crapshoot, and he actually liked my work, so I got in.
Yeah.
After that, I've held various academic positions, and I've guest conducted in a few places, and that's all stuff people can read. Gustav Meyer is my principal teacher. I also studied for 2 weeks in Estonia with Nemi Järvi, mm-hmm. and at the Oregon Bach Festival with Helmut Reilly. Mm-hmm.
So what was the year of hanging out? What did that entail?
Going to his conducting seminar, and he found me a job. He offered me a job at the Michigan Youth Symphony, which mm-hmm. was all a high school audition. Still have many Facebook friends that were kids in that orchestra that just want to say howdy every now and then, show me pictures of their kids and their dog and their breakfast. Through that year, I conducted the Michigan Youth Symphony in 3 concerts, and it was every Saturday I would meet with them.
Mm-hmm.
So during, I think the Michigan Youth Symphony thing helped me get accepted into school.
Mm-hmm. So obviously you've had, you've had a lot of experience outside of the schooling system. You had things between each of your degrees. And I think that's very important for conductors, especially. You have to, work outside of the school. What are some things that students can do to help with that? Because the tendency, at least now it seems to be, is just to go from degree to degree.
I don't necessarily think that that is a bad thing to go from degree to degree. But in the meantime, while you're in the degree, you need to find other things that you can do. Put together a septet in 2018 and honor the centennial of L'Histoire du Soldat by Stravinsky.
Mm-hmm.
Buy your own set of parts or borrow them, steal them, whatever you need to do to get parts. Make sure you edit the parts correctly so no one has to think about down bow or up bow or errors in the parts, because there are at least 75 errors in those L'Histoire parts. That you get a Nerada list and you fix them.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a sidelight, when I get rental music, I'm told I'm not supposed to fix rental parts. I fix them with ink and white out. Screw the publishers.
Mm-hmm.
So there are other things you can do. The thing also is to constantly keep yourself involved. If you're you both are close enough to big cities to be able to drive to a big city, hang out at a rehearsal, and drive back to your homes. Mm-hmm. You could go to Denver, Jeremy. I don't know how far Salt Lake is from where you are. Probably a lot farther than Denver. Yeah. But nonetheless, there's a professional orchestra there. St. Louis, Kansas City for you, Luke. Contact the artistic administrator in those places. Go up there for rehearsals. Have scores with you that they're going to do. Sit in the audience on maestro's left-hand side near the first violins, because he will look at the first violins more than he looks at anything else. And whenever he looks over like this to the first violins, your nose should be in that score with a pencil. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he will eventually, he won't know you're there until eventually, he'll, you know, who's at my rehearsal? And they will all say something to you. Either wave or just come here. You know, who are you? Mm-hmm. I'm Jeremy Cubis. I'm hanging out here just to watch you. Oh, very good. Tell me more about yourself. One sentence. Mm-hmm. I'm studying with Wes Kenny at Colorado State. I'm studying with whoever you're studying with at Missouri State. Oh, great, great. Well, I'm glad you could make some time. Maestro, do you have time for a question? One question. Not the story of your life. Not I know so much about music theory. What about this 5-7 chord here? Why do you stretch it out? No. One question. Okay. Then you maybe get to go back, and then you get noticed again, and you get somebody you can talk to a little bit. Mm-hmm. You can't resume you studied with them because it's a lie. But you have some information, right? You can tell people, I've been hanging out at rehearsals. I've been invited. You can say you're an official attender at rehearsals. I spent 3 or 4 years at Daniel Barenboim's rehearsals and at Pierre Boulez's rehearsals. Mm-hmm. I got to have more than one personal private conversation with Boulez in the dressing room. And one day, Bob, I don't know how to get to this restaurant. Do you know where it is? Oh, what's the address? It's on Jackson. Oh, yeah, come on, I'll walk you there. Mm-hmm. Walking down the street in Chicago with Pierre Boulez. Pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's in between times. Do that. Get a one-page biography that says pertinent and important things. Have somebody check it to see if they're both pertinent and important. Send those out via email to various orchestras. Just want to let you know, I'm looking for future conducting opportunities. I've done X, Y, and Z. Here's a videotape of me. Here is my biography. Please let me know if I may be of service to Orchestra X. And send them out. We got email. It doesn't even cost you anything but time. Mm-hmm. Be in contact with people like that. Keep a list of people that you can contact. List of people that you work with a little bit. You know, I met Jarvi for the first time in Boston. I was there for Tanglewood. Seiji had canceled everything. He was still music director in Boston. And Anna-Sophie Mutter was there to record the Berg Violin Concerto with Jarvi. Mm-hmm. With us. And she played one of the most boring Mozart threes I've ever heard. Because she was physically sighing on the stage because her whole body was geared up to play Berg, right? Mm-hmm. And Nemi didn't know Berg, and he didn't have time to learn it, being called like 2 days beforehand to rehearse a program that ended up being this Arvo Pärt piece that was just terrible, and Mozart 3 and Sibelius 5. So I went backstage to meet Nemi, shook his hand, what are you doing? Very short, studying with Gustav Meyer at Michigan, and I'm here for a Tanglewood audition. Oh, good luck, good luck. Nemi comes to Chicago the time I'm studying with, or not studying, coattailing Barenboim. When he sees me, where do I know you? Well, we met a few years. Oh, yeah, that's right, you were Meyer's student. Tell me more about you. Blah, 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 blah. Then he's back there a year later. Listen, I got this thing I'm going to do in Estonia. It's a master course for 2 weeks. It's more than just a master class because there will be prizes and there'll be a concert opportunity in the second week. First week is just pianos. Second week, you get to work with the orchestra, and then I'll decide who gets to be on the final concert. Are you interested? I was interested. I didn't have any money, but I was interested. But I knew some people that had some money, and I asked them, and they sent me to Estonia. Sure. So that's a long answer to say that in between, if you want a career in this, always going to do something besides asking if people want fries with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so one of the questions we wanted to ask you was about guest conducting, because you have a long, long, long list on your website of all those engagements. And we're just, you know, we're...
And it's all true. So yeah. Make sure it's all true.
Mm-hmm. So how... I mean, what you've just told us may be the answer, but how does, you know, a student start getting into that world?
One of the ways is to begin to make friends with artistic administrators. Another way is to be in touch in this internet age when you can reach out and point and click, and you're sending something to Zimbabwe or Malaysia or, you know, far flung places of the globe. I didn't have that advantage when I started out, but then again, I was applying for music director positions. They were looking at the stuff. They were saying, we would like him to be a candidate for music director. There's probably 24 orchestras I don't even list on that list because they are smaller and not, you know what I'm saying. I'm not trying to be, you don't want to list the Bug Tussle's Philharmonic with Milwaukee Symphony. Right? I mean, yeah. Think about it. So getting some of those gigs is being in the right place at the right time. I got 3 or 4 gigs just hanging out at Chicago Symphony rehearsals. I had covered for Andreas Delfs in Milwaukee. I don't remember what the situation was. Somebody recommended me to cover for a week in Milwaukee, and I went up, and Andreas liked me because I didn't bullshit him. I didn't try and stick my nose up you know where. I told him the truth, that the horns are flat, that so-and-so's behind you, blah, 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 blah. And nobody tells me the truth. I'm a music director. They all lie to me. Oh, Maestro, it just sounds wonderful. I'm so honored to be here. Mm-hmm. Right? So he had me on the list to come back, and I went back maybe 6 months later. I mean, meals, hotel, and $1,000 for sitting on your ass taking notes. It's not a bad gig. So, and the hotel was right across the street. I didn't even have to move the car. So, Doc Nanyi was in Chicago conducting Brahms 1 with CSO. Turns out Andreas had studied with Doc Nanyi in Europe, and he turned up there. Why weren't you in our audition for the assistant conductor position? The guy left. I said, I can't answer that. Listen, I got something coming up I want you to do. So I got a call from the artistic administrator. I had to cover for Andreas again during that period of time. Well, actually, it wasn't the artistic administrator. It was the minion to the artistic administrator, right? Evans Mirages was the artistic administrator at Milwaukee at that time. And Evans took me aside at this concert I was covering and said, we both like you a lot, and we have some opportunities for you. All of a sudden, 10 Christmas concerts and 4 children's concerts were in my lap.
Yeah.
Because I was in the right place. You're never in Fort Collins or in Springfield going to meet people that have you in the right place. Never. Will never happen. You need to be in a big city where things are happening. Mm-hmm. Even if it's Denver or Salt Lake, or even if it's St. Louis or Kansas City. More likely Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, New York. Find a way to get into or meet people. Don't talk as much as you listen.
Yeah.
The other stuff, I mean, I mailed out stuff. I got some of those. I was a candidate for music director, and they brought me in to conduct. Others, like this thing with Andreas and Milwaukee. Other things were I mailed out 400 emails and got one response.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Poland. And the music director liked me very much, and he invited me back 2 years later. It's just keep in constant contact, especially if anybody responds to the email every 3 months. You've done something. Even if it's insignificant, twist it to make it significant. Don't lie, just twist it to make it significant. Dear Joe, just thinking about you this morning. Same letter to everybody, of course. Dear Joe, dear Fred, dear Jane. Thinking about you this morning. Just finished a week coattailing Andrew Litton in Denver. I had a great time, learned a lot. Keep me in mind if something comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Love me.
Yeah.
I've gone on and on about that. Does that answer your question?
No, yeah, it definitely does. Being in the right place at the right time and just being available and being proactive. And, you know, you're not waiting for things to happen.
Right, because the phone will not ring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to go out and you have to tell people about yourself.
Mm-hmm. So,
nicely.
Yeah.
Precisely.
So who is somebody that you particularly admire? And this is not necessarily a conductor.
Maurice Abravanel was so sane. He was like a grandfather to me, but not a spoiling grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's country grandpa that, you know, takes you under his wing and tells you a story. And then the next day he kicks your ass because you've done something stupid. He was a delightful man. I'm getting tears in my eyes just thinking about Maurice. I met him at a conducting workshop for the American Symphony Orchestra, which has a different name now. I think it's called Laos. It used to be called ASOL. They got tired of being called Asshole. So they changed it to the League of American Symphony. Now it's Laos.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, apparently Maurice was artist in residence for life at Tanglewood. He was also artist in residence with all these conducting workshops as their godfather, let's say. And he would sit behind the conductors. And I was told by somebody the day that he stopped lunch to come up and talk to me in the middle of me conducting Egmont with this group that he never got up and talked to anybody.
Yeah.
So he liked it. I went to Tanglewood, and by luck of the draw, I was selected to be the Maurice Abravanel Scholarship winner. Of course, in my biography, that is, I was the recipient of the Maurice Abravanel Award. It's not a lie, but it sounds different than scholarship winner, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I was required to write a letter to the person who provided the scholarship. Well, Maurice didn't have deep pockets like that. It was some person in Utah that just loved Maurice that created a scholarship in his name at Tanglewood. But I had to write a letter to Abravanel. So I write the letter. It was very effusive about to have the name of a great conductor like him on my scholarship was very important to me and blah, blah, blah. Next day, the old man who could barely see past his nose is looking for me at the gate of Tanglewood. Bob, my boy, such a beautiful letter you wrote today. You must have lunch with me today. Maestro, it would be my honor to have lunch with you. And I had lunch with Abravanel once a week for the rest of the time I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Carolyn would call me up. Maurice Abravanel lived through the 20th century and never drove a car. Never drove an automobile by himself. Carolyn called me up one day. Can you take Maurice into town? He needs to do some stuff. Absolutely. So, you know, I'm loading the old man into my Nissan. We went into Pittsfield and blah, blah, blah. And he bought some deodorant or whatever he needed, you know. And I got 30 private minutes with Maurice Abravanel.
Mm-hmm.
I got more and more of that. Then, when Utah had the opening, I went to him. He said, it's a terrible department of music. I said, would you prefer I go back to Ann Arbor and shovel shit this winter while I'm looking for work? I'll make a call for you.
Mm-hmm.
I got at the door with the recommendation of the man who was conductor laureate of the Utah Symphony. Do you think I was looked at? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had to do the stuff myself. It wasn't just, you know, I was a brother. He was a great man, a great human being.
Yeah.
He was sane. He was sensitive. He would tell you the truth without being cruel. He would stand up for what was right without being pompous about it. He was just a marvelous individual for me. And here's the kicker story. He signed a picture for me that I had on the wall of my studio when I was in Utah. The picture sat just left from me on the wall. My desk was here. Another wall was here. It's kind of an L-shaped wall that this went out to the hallway. This was a long wall window over here. McMaurice's picture just to my left, signed, phone here. Got a phone call from downstairs. I had heard he had come back from Tanglewood, that he had fallen that summer, which would have been the summer of 1993. He was becoming more and more frail. He had fallen two summers before that also. And I was intending to try and get to the hospital and see him, but he'd just gotten home. The phone call told me he was dead. So I sat there for a minute, went downstairs, ran into R. Dean Watts, who'd been his assistant conductor of the Utah Symphony. We both visited Maurice in the hospital 2 years before when he had his other fall. And he and I held each other in the hallway for a while the old man, R. Dean was a very large man, while he cried on my shoulder. And Jeremy, you know me, you've never seen me, I'm not a small, I could fit inside R. Dean Watts. I mean, he was just a very large man. He's like a base case compared to me. And we stood and talked about Maurice and, you know, dried our tears and the whole thing. And I went back upstairs and the phone rang again. I was downstairs still. And Barbara, the secretary, said, we know you have that picture, autographed picture of Maestro on your wall. Until we get a better picture, we want to build a little memorial in one of these window cases here in the hallway. Would you bring that down for us? I said, of course. I went back upstairs. This is no lie at all. The picture of Abravanel was off the wall. It was sitting by my telephone facing my chair. He came by to say goodbye. I sat down. My knees were weak when I saw this. I sat down. I said, thanks for coming by.
Yeah.
Anyway, Maurice Abravanel is my person of interest on both levels. He was a fine conductor. He was a fine human being. He knew everybody. Told me the most incredible stories. 1944, he and Aaron Copland and Arthur Berger were taking a cab together in New York City. And they're talking about Bernstein, who just made his debut with Pittsburgh Symphony. Maybe it's 42, I don't remember. He just made his debut with Pittsburgh Symphony, conducting his own first symphony there. And Maurice said to Copland, Aaron, you know, with Lenny, I think he's a much better conductor than he is even a composer. And Copland says, and I quote, don't tell the little bastard that. His head is so big right now, it won't fit through the door of this cab. Aaron Copland, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
I heard all kinds of stories like that. I mean, Abravanel knew Ravel.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, he and Mio were like this. He and Mio were drinking buddies.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking buddies with Darius Mio. He had autographed pictures on his mantle of Leontine Price, Arthur Rubinstein, and Yasha Heifetz. It was great to hang out with him. You guys should be half as lucky as me.
So this next question is my favorite. If you could erect a billboard that every musician were forced to see every day, what would you put on it? And that could be a quote, yours or someone else's, or an image, or some message.
Study scores.
Study scores. Like, go study your score, or buy...
You got milk. Study scores.
Yeah, that's
one thing that musicians that are orchestral musicians for the most part do not do is study scores.
Mm-hmm.
They learn their part. They don't learn how their part fits in. Now, you guys know you both played chamber music in some form, right?
Yep.
I would hope that in playing chamber music that you and the other members of your quartet, quintet, whatever, have a score that you all can look at.
Mm-hmm.
If not, you're not really playing chamber music. You're playing your part and doing only your thing within the whole complicated mess.
Yeah.
You must have a score each of you. You must look at that score in between. You must know with before you listen that what is happening, that you're playing in unison octaves with the viola or the bassoon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's important.
Yeah.
It's number one.
I've been to some solo master classes also where the teacher will say, you know, you're not just playing this with the piano. Go grab a score, find out what's playing that line. That's very good advice, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I've had young pianists that audition for solos, and they will come to me, they're not the winner, and what do I need to do? I said, you have no idea what's playing in the orchestra.
Yeah.
You need to know that. And it will change how you play the piano.
Mm-hmm. So what books or resources do you find yourself either using or suggesting often?
As far as a resources for me are programming resources.
Okay.
So I need to know if I'm going to program how long the piece is, where I can get it, and what is the instrumentation. David Daniel's book on orchestral music, and it's now in its fifth or seventh edition, I think. I've got the older edition, third edition, which I've supplemented myself with stuff that isn't in there. You just write it in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Very good resource. Oddly enough, the Kalmus catalog remains a very good resource.
Okay.
Because the Kalmus catalog has timings and has instrumentation.
Yes.
We all know Kalmus is a Greek word meaning error, but the Kalmus catalog, at least, does not contain many errors. It's a very good resource for programming. As far as musical stuff, I'm sorry to say that I'm not as devout as a priest. I don't go back and read the Bible every day, but I have the Bible nearby in case I need to look at it. And there are several Bibles, because no one has written yet the definitive book on conducting. Gustav's book is very good on conducting and very thorough, but I'm just sorry to say it's too thorough. It does not sound like him.
Yeah.
It sounds too academic. He was not an academic person. He was very enthusiastic about his love for music, and the book doesn't come across like that,
okay.
Which is why it was, to me, disappointing. God rest him, that it came off more like McGraw-Hill and Gustav Meyer,
yeah.
Or whoever published it, I don't remember. Elizabeth Green's book on conducting is very good. And I will say, if you can find it, guys, if you can't find it, you will let me know and I will Xerox the introduction to it. Hermann Scherkin's
text
on conducting is just a marvelous. The introduction is worth the price of the book. And I found it at a used bookstore for $5.
Yeah.
Christine, $5.
Yeah.
Wow. So reading about stuff, I would say it's more important for conductors to read about the stuff which went into making this particular work, whatever it is. Here's a minutia example. When you conduct a mall and the night visitors, you need to know what each one of those stones are in the This Is My Box aria sung by Caspar.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know those because the singer won't. And then you need to ask the singer, especially if they're a student, what is a lapis lazuli? I had no idea what a lapis lazuli is. Did you guys know what a lapis lazuli is?
No.
And it was considered in the ancient world to have some sort of magical properties. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. I've never had one in my hand. A buddy of mine has tux studs that are, let's see, they match his lovely blue eyes. You know, cufflinks and stud buttons that are this lapis. The singer was even told by his teacher, do you know what this other stuff is? No, no, no. You better learn it because Professor DeBow will know it. And guess what happened? I asked this question. He got dumbfounded. His teacher dropped his score and walked out the door. His head like this.
Yeah.
So the minutia of things, you need to learn about that. It's not just that fine tuning, but what caused Menotti to have the idea of writing that piece?
Mm-hmm.
What of Menotti can you find in the piece, if anything? What was going on in his life at that time? Does that affect the music? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. It's either one thing or the other. You are either consumed by what is happening in your life when you write a piece of music, or it is an escape from what is happening in your life.
Yep.
I listened to the ending of Pathetique the other night, Tchaikovsky. Kir Kondrashin. If you don't know that name, you should, especially for Russian music. Kondrashin's Pathetique on tour with Moscow Philharmonic, Suntory Hall, Tokyo, 1977. I couldn't speak the rest of the night. You hear Tchaikovsky writing a suicide diary.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. That's the last piece he wrote. It's a suicide diary. He knew he wanted to die. It's just overwhelming.
Yeah.
I've never conducted Pathetique. First time I experienced working on it was in seminar with Meyer. And as doctoral student, I was kind of like his chief of staff. There were five master students and me. So when he was not around, I was, you know, not in charge, but make sure that Jeffrey does so-and-so and tell Dorian I need to get so-and-so, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So we were talking logistics because he was going to be out the next week. What's with you today? What do you mean? It's Pathetique. I can't conduct this music. Why is that? It's too painful. The rest of the week, he would call on me to do Mozart, Haydn, Schubert, whatever we were working on. He never called on me for Tchaikovsky.
Yeah.
So, you know what's going on with all the stuff in the score.
Mm-hmm.
Am I far off the topic yet?
No. I forgot what the topic was. I have to find it on my list.
I always do. It's not just age. I've been this way since I was 10. They had Ritalin when I was a kid, I'd be president.
Anyway. Well,
the topic was resources.
That's right, yes.
Knowing where you can find out this information. Read the letters. Will the letters of Mozart make you conduct Mozart differently? Maybe. A couple pieces. Will Freud's notes on his therapy session with Gustav Mahler make you conduct Das Lied von der Erde differently? Maybe if you're into that sort of thing. But it makes you understand the man just a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Why are there so many climaxes in Mahler's music that are not climaxes? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It builds up and suddenly you go somewhere else?
Yeah.
Why is that? Mm-hmm. Read the Freud stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we got to go figure out. I don't know.
I think he and Alma had a few problems in the old boudoir, if you know what I'm talking about. Oh, and another, guys,
yeah.
If you've never been to the New York Philharmonic Archives, you have to go there.
Yeah.
You have to go to the New York Philharmonic Archives and look at parts marked by Gustav Mahler.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I'm studying Brahms 3. I don't know where I'm going to conduct it this season, but I am. I don't know yet. But I'm studying it, marking the parts, stealing Boeings. And I look through there, and usually you can see Bernstein's parts, which is pretty, you know, exciting mm-hmm. as it is. Castellanets also, Mazur. But Mahler? Yeah. Mahler's Brahms 3 parts.
Yeah.
Mahler was a part marker. I don't know if you guys are or you know people that are. I'm a part marker. I mark parts all the time.
Okay.
All parts, not just Boeings. Boeings are mine. The parts are marked by me. I heard George Zell did it. I figured it was good enough for him. It was good
enough. Yeah, I was on there yesterday to steal Boeings for a piece that we're not going to have time to get actually bowed by the principals.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes that's necessary. It's really a good thing. Now that you have that resource,
mm-hmm.
I had no time for a Brahms double. I did this summer in Guatemala City, and I went directly there and stole the Boeings.
Yeah.
And everybody loved them.
Good.
Everybody had to say, "Trumpet Boy did the Boeings? Why should we?" They were bowed by a trumpet player.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that too.
Yeah, and then that those like you know, top tier level orchestra bowings, they're either great or they're totally the opposite of what everyone wants to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because they're hard.
Yeah.
Because they're virtuoso players.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anyway, it's always a fun thing to do. First time that Mozart Ham Orchestra I had in Kansas City did on my own bowings. First rehearsal. The Reinecke ending to Mozart's Overture to Idomeneo.
Yeah.
And Carl Reinecke finished it because it like Abduction from the Seraglio, segues into the opera. There's no break between the
Overture. Yeah.
So Reinecke finished it. I did my own bowings. I budgeted for this 5-minute overture, 20 minutes of rehearsal, first day, 45 minutes with them saying down and up. 45 minutes. Finally, we got to Hafner Symphony. I said, well, this should be just fine because these are Raphael Durian's bowings from Pleated Orchestra. And where did he get those? They were my bowings. Not one of them was Durian's bowings.
Yeah.
And you can buy his bowings in a set from Kalmus. He has that first chair series. You know about that, Jeremy?
No, I don't.
Durian, he's dead now, I think, edited a set called First Chair, and it was Cleveland Orchestra Bowings. You could buy a set of five masters,
mm-hmm.
and his Bowings, all neatly marked. Oh, he had this little mark for, what's the term? Retake.
Yeah,
retake. I just put a comma. He put a little registered trademark. Retake. But anyway, that's another source for Bowings.
Mm-hmm.
Find them. I don't think they're in print anymore, but somebody has to have them.
Yeah. Luke, do you want to hop in and ask your favorite question? Hello?
I've got to figure out how to work my phone. I'm not smart.
No, I can hear you. I was just concerned maybe they'd stuck the Novocaine in you.
Oh, I'm not here from. I'm just waiting to pick up somebody who's on the Novocaine. I think what the question Jeremy's wanting me to ask is, because it's my favorite, is like, what's a piece that you think is very important that you personally love or have a connection to that maybe isn't popular or in the standard rep that you think everybody should go listen to, should find?
Yeah. Saint-Saëns, First Symphony, Opus 2. Every time I'm in the car, you know, you get in the car, I'm sure you guys do the same thing. You're not tuning into Willie Nelson or Taylor Swift. You got the classical station on, right?
Because
mm-hmm. you're learning new stuff. Guess what? I'm 61. I still do that. Besides, if I want to listen to Willie Nelson, it's when I'm out on the road. I'm not driving a long distance, because if I drive a long distance and listen to classical music, I hit things. So then Saint-Saëns, every time I listen to something on the radio and I can't stop listening to it, I get in the parking lot, I spend 10 more minutes in the cold car or a hot car, or just leave the AC running and listen to the end. It's always something by Saint-Saëns.
Mm-hmm.
The guy wrote a whole bunch of stuff that never gets played. It's all marvelous. First Symphony, Opus 2, at 18 years old, he had the temerity to number his works. It's in E-flat major. First three movements, pretty much winds in pairs, four horns, two trumpets, timpani. Third movement adds two harps. Fourth movement adds three trombones, two sax horns, and an array of percussion. The sax horns you can substitute with tuba, small tuba, because it's an E-flat, low E-flat. Small tuba and baritone horn work just fine for that. There's two trumpets and two cornets. It's in E-flat major. It obviously pays a lot of homage to Beethoven, because how can you be born in 1835 and grow up a musician and not know about Beethoven
mm-hmm.
when you're starting out, right? But it doesn't sound borrowed or contrived. It's just an homage in many ways. The whole piece starts out with just a horn solo. Bom, bom, bom. The string sort of, yum, bom, bom. And then it goes, yum, da-da, dee-da-da, dee-da-da. Beautiful first melody. Second movement, it's like a beautiful French girl walking, holding her shoes, walking down a lane.
Mm-hmm.
Dress kind of in the breeze, Flute takes over from the oboe. In the third movement, she's broken his heart. It's so full of adolescent longing and pain. It's just deep, deep sensitivity. And the last movement is just a fucking party. It's a wonderful piece. You got to do it. I loved it enough I memorized. I always conducted memorized about three times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a beautiful piece.
Mm-hmm.
Orchestras love it too. Where did you find this? Well, gee, I St. Saul wrote many symphonies. The first one is great. The second one sucks. The third one's famous.
Mm-hmm.
The second one he was studying with someone. It's very academic.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't even waste your time to listen to it unless you're just curious. First one, that's who the man was. He was just a genius with a fire in his belly.
Yeah.
And wrote beautiful music.
Well, do you have a recording we could find? I was going to go find one on YouTube and post it.
I don't know if Nemi recorded it. If Nemi did listen to it, you can find it on YouTube. I just don't remember who did it. Listen to any one of them. They're probably pretty good.
All right.
If they're French orchestras. You know, Nemi is the most recorded conductor in history, and I would certainly recommend almost anything he does. He's pretty good at almost everything. I don't know that he's recorded Baroque music because I know he doesn't care at all about Baroque music. But, you know, Stenhammer symphonies, Tubin symphonies,
mm-hmm.
Shostakovich, all the symphonies. A lot of great stuff out there that he recorded with Scottish National and Göteborg and Detroit.
Yeah.
Detroit, he came in there and recorded a lot of American stuff that's never been recorded before. Barber symphonies, the three Barber essays, Amy Beach symphony. Yeah. By the way, in case anyone ever says to you that the Gaelic symphony is named Gaelic because it has Gaelic folk songs in it, they don't know what they're talking about. There are no Gaelic folk songs in Amy Beach's Gaelic symphony. They sound like Gaelic folk songs, which is what she intended.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't borrow anything on that.
Alrighty.
No evidence at all. Yeah. And there's one woman who wrote a dissertation on that.
So that goes, those are all our questions. Do you have any final comments or advice or anything for the listeners?
I'm going to share with you guys and your listeners what was shared with me by Gustav Meyer. Meyer, of course, was in the most famous Tanglewood conducting class, where his classmates were Claudio Avato, Zubin Mehta, and David Zinman. Eleazar de Carvalho, the Brazilian conductor, was the conducting teacher at Tanglewood at that time. Carvalho had studied with Furt Wagler in Berlin.
Yeah.
So I tell people, this is my lineage. I studied with Meyer. Meyer studied with Carvalho. Carvalho studied with Furt Wagler. Furt Wagler studied with Nikisch. Nikisch studied with Liszt. Liszt studied with God. That's my lineage.
Mm-hmm.
Carvalho said to them, I have three words of advice for you, and this will sound familiar because I've already said this. To be a conductor, you have to study scores, study scores, study scores.
Yeah.
Meyer said, I know that's true, but I'm going to add three things to that. Be a good musician, be a good musician, be a good musician.
Mm-hmm.
And mine is be an elephant. Have a thick skin and a long memory.
All right.
Are you doing the famous orchestration or the original orchestration?
For Merry Widow?
Yeah.
We're doing the pit only fits about 10 or 11 people, so we're doing a reduction. Yeah, and actually our pianist has to sit outside of the pit.
Do you know the difference between the two orchestrations I mentioned?
No, I don't.
Lehar wrote The Widow, I think, in the 20s, it seems to me. Maybe the late teens, early 20s in the 20th century. Took on a great popularity. Lehar was the favorite operetta composer of Adolf Hitler.
Oh, okay.
He loved The Merry Widow. He could sing chapter and verse. He could sing little lines from Merry Widow. He would quote Merry Widow in speeches to people when or to guests when they said something that reminded him of The Merry Widow. Lehar got wind of that, and that Hitler, after the Anschluss of 1938, was going to the state opera where Lehar's Merry Widow was scheduled, and he decided to reorchestrate it because Hitler was going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
The reorchestration is certainly an improvement on the original orchestration. There's a lot more color instruments, not just like, you know, 10 woodwinds, but a full complement of
woodwinds. Okay.
So if you ever get a chance to do it in a big house, that's the one to find. Not because there was an homage to one of the very scandalous murders of all time, but that Lehar redid it, and it's worth doing. Gustav was a master at Secco recitatives.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, last time I conducted Figaro memorized, including the Secco. Because it is just dialed in to what we do.
Mm-hmm.
It dials everything in like it's a formula. And once it gets in your brain, it's just like, okay, here it is. And that was another thing to add into your study is finding formulas in things.
Okay.
The violin scurrying nonsense at the finale of Leonore 3.
Yeah.
There's a formula there. You find the formula, it helps you memorize those few lines and not screw up the entrance of the seconds and then the violas and the cellos and the basses.
Mm-hmm.
Romeo and Juliet. Dun, 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 all that business that has the strings are just going nuts and it's the winds you're picking at it. There's a formula to that.
Yeah.
So just start to look for those things in little passaggi that you do, just to enhance that into your own study.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for that advice.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Podium Time. You can find show notes for this episode and all of our other episodes at podiumtimepod.wordpress.com. Be sure to join our mailing list there or on our Facebook page at facebook.com/podiumtimepod. Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony was performed by the Czech National Symphony Orchestra, and Beethoven's Egmont Overture was performed by Stefano Ligorati.